son. I'll tell you what's good. Don't call my number anymore. You'll say who you are, what you want, and then you tell me don't call our number. Don't call mine.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News.
It's time for Peculiar Podcast, hosted by Pat Cashman.
Gorgeous to look at.
And Lisa Foster.
She's dangerous.
See, you're on.
Ready or not, it's Pat and Lisa.
Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
It's love and time.
By golly, it's been a long time.
Yeah. Didn't you, have some, surgery or something? What happened to you?
Oh, no, I didn't have any surgery. I thought I was going to. My wife thinks I'm a hypochondriac. because if anything hurts or there's anything, any small twitch or then I assume I'm going to the hospital.
Right. I've made the observation that this is remarkable because this is not normal male behavior. You typically will wait until it falls off or it smells before you
That's also true. That's because I'm avoiding thinking about it too much. And yeah, but you're right. I do that too. I thought I have a hernia.
No, you didn't. It was your tooth.
I got the two things. Yeah, it's a twofer. I thought it was a hernia. Went to the doctor. He said, I don't feel anything. I said, well, you're on my head. And he said, down here. Oh, he said, oh, okay. No, I still don't feel like you hernia. He said, so let's do an x-ray. He did an x-ray. And the news was really good, Lisa. Oh,
what?
My God.
What?
So relieving. It turns out I don't have a hernia. I just have degenerative arthritis in my hip. Isn't that great?
That
was a load off.
It's better than having a hernia in your head. Could you imagine having a hernia in your head?
Not again. No. That was the worst thing I've ever gone through.
Anyway, you're okay?
I'm okay. Then I had an abscess tooth. That out of my head, and so but I'm still numb, and that's been two weeks ago. I said, should I still be numb? And he said, well, since your abscess, it could go on for 6 weeks. I said, oh, okay, good.
Maybe,
can't wait.
Maybe they pulled the wrong thing. I mean, that doesn't sound normal.
Yeah, you might be right. Anyway, let's
get
on.
I'm glad to talk
to
you. It's been a while.
It has been a while. Mm-hmm. Let me get into our usual litany of those who have left this mortal coil.
Yes.
Starting with this fellow, Greg Kine. I think I'm saying his name right. He's a pretty big hit maker. Everybody thought he was too nice. He didn't look like a rock and roll guy. He was very polite and nice. This was one of his songs, the breakup song. And then he had this hit called Jeopardy. Do you remember this one?
Yes.
He says when he was a kid, he saw the Beatles. And he decided, that's what I want to do. I want to be a rock and roll performer. As a little kid. Yeah.
And he's gone? How old is he? 75.
Yeah.
Did he also, I'm looking this up. He does look like a nice guy. Did he also do Reelin' in the Years, or is that different?
No, that's Steely Dan.
Oh, okay. I don't know why this showed up on his page, but.
Yeah. Well, maybe he wrote it. I don't know. I don't know why it would be on his page. Okay, then, Maurice Williams.
Just a little bit longer.
86 was with the doo-wop group called the Zodiacs, and this was a giant hit in 1960. Number one was called Stay. And this song. Mm-hmm. It became a cover for a million other groups, Four Seasons.
Oh, just a little bit longer.
Since the Hollies.
Your mama don't mind. Your mama and your papa don't mind.
Cyndi Lauper did a version.
Hey, just a little bit longer.
Jackson Brown. He was with another group called the Gladiolas. He had this hit called Little Darling.
Gladiolas. What a... Really? Of all the names, yeah. You're going to name yourself after a flower?
Yeah, well, you know, I guess better than a weed. Maurice Williams was 86.
The Dandelions would be fun. I wouldn't mind that.
But, you know this song, Stay, by the way?
Yeah.
It's only 90 seconds long. And that is weird, but he said we did it really short because we thought we would get more airplay that way, and he was right. It worked. Here's another music name, Jerry Fuller. He was 85 years old, and he wrote all kinds of songs, like Travelin' Man, this one by Ricky Nelson.
I'm a travelin' man, made a lot of stops all over the world.
But he was mostly associated with Gary Puckett and the Union Gap.
I love Gary Puckett.
You know, Gary Puckett was from Yakima.
I think he's from Yakima. That.
And that's why the name of the group, Union Gap, which is, right next to Yakima.
Didn't you tell me the story of they just hadn't come up with a name and they just like pulled out a map and stuck their finger on it and it's their finger stuck on Union? Or is that a?
I think it's baloney. Yeah. I think. He knew he already knew Union Gap because he lived right there. So,
oh, yeah. Okay.
The other story is better, but it's not true. Yeah. Anyway, this songwriter named Jerry Fuller, he basically wrote almost all of the Union Gap songs. Over You.
Why am I losing sleep over you?
And then this would fall under the category of our occasional feature, Tawdry Tunes, Young Girl.
Young girl, get out of my mind. My love for you is way out of line. Better run, girl, you're much too young, girl.
Yeah, that is creepy. Yeah. It's a creepy song.
Well, some people just like it as a song, but it could be interpreted as creepy because it's basically an adult man having the hots for a teenage girl.
Interpreted as it is creepy. There's no interpretation needed.
I guess you're right.
You just said why.
Yeah, okay.
You just explained it.
Fair enough.
And now it hurts to know the truth.
All right, now let's move off of music. Phil Donahue passed away, 88 years old.
Oh, yeah.
Talk show host.
How old? I'm sorry, I talked over you. How old was he?
88.
We've always been a little hungry. We've never taken anything for granted.
One of the problems that we have with America today.
But guess who died at 98? Peter Marshall, the longtime host of the Hollywood Squares.
Yeah.
For $250, Paul, true or false, your teeth are about the same size and shape as a pig's.
Look who's talking, beaver face.
Such an affable host. He was he let the stars shine in his, but he was the host of the show, and he was such a good, was that the only game show he hosted? I'm going to look that up.
I don't know for sure, but he did that forever, and he was great at it. Then the actress Gina Rollins died, 94.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not one of those stiffs that you like. Their nose is up in the air. And boom, boom, with their noses up in the air. Oh, awfully nice. Thank you. I'm not going to treat those guys. I want them to feel I love those guys. I love them. I love anybody who brings in a house snake.
I know that.
And then this one, a woman named Mitzi McCall, 93 years old. She was a part of a comedy team with a guy who eventually became her husband, Charlie Brill. They became famously infamous in a way because on February 9th, 1964, they were invited to be on the Ed Sullivan Show, and they bombed. They didn't bomb because they stunk. They bombed because the audience in the theater didn't want to see them. This was the first appearance in the United States of the Beatles. And the Beatles did a song at the beginning of the show, and then they had other acts, and Mitzi McCall and her husband came out. And
how do you do?
My little girl is waiting outside, you know. She used to be one of the Beatles.
Well, what happened?
Somebody stepped on her.
But the kids in the audience, mostly kids, didn't want to. They wanted the Beatles to do their second song. And they didn't boo them, but they didn't laugh at any of their stuff. And there was a television audience of 73 million viewers, and their career took a tumble after that. Their agent, they say, didn't even call them for 6 months. But eventually they got back at it, and they had a nice, successful comedy career. She appeared in lots of TV shows and stuff. Mitzi McCall. And then I'm sorry, what were you going to say?
Oh, you have one more?
Yeah, on a more personal note, I wanted to mention Charlie Cross. Who died at the age of 67. I knew Charlie. He, among other things, ran the Rocket magazine. It was a music magazine. Do you remember that?
No.
It was a newspaper, really.
Here in Seattle?
Oh, yeah. 1986 okay. to 2000.
I wasn't here in I moved here, I think, in 91.
Yeah, this magazine was very much a staple during your time here. Among other people, Charlie brought on a young reporter named John Keister to work on the Rocket. But Charlie was most famous and notable for writing books regarding Jimi Hendrix, Kurt Cobain. He wrote a book on Springsteen, and in a recent concert, Springsteen mentioned Charlie, just a great biographer. He wrote about Nirvana and Pearl Jam, Soundgarden, Led Zeppelin, Heart. Very prolific. One time, I can remember this, and I think you might have been on the show then, or maybe you were on vacation. But there was a Grammy Awards the night before, and we did a morning show, you and I. So I thought, and we had a new young kind of producer or a fledgling producer. This was at Como Radio, and it was in the morning, and we would come on. The Grammys were the night before, and I came up with the idea, and I said, hey, I want you to try and locate a guy named Charlie Cross. He is a music guy. He knows all things about music, and I want to interview him about what he thought about last night's Grammys. So the young producer goes, okay, what was his name again? Charles Cross. Okay. And then I look at my screen, which is in front of me, and there it shows on line one holding Charlie Cross. And so I do this whole setup. Oh, and the Grammys were last night, and we thought we'd talk to a guy who knows a thing or two about music. Charles Cross. Charlie, good morning. Yeah, what's going on, man? Charlie? Yeah, that's my name, Charles Cross. And he has no idea why he came on the radio, but he agreed to. So I decided, I'm just going to go with it. I'll just go with it. Pretend like it's perfectly fine. And so I start asking this total stranger about the Grammys from the night before.
Oh, my God.
And he doesn't know anything about it. I mean, he said, well, who's your favorite musician? He said, I love me Aretha Franklin. And I go, oh. Well, you know, she didn't get any awards last night. Well, that sucks. Yeah, it kind of does. And it was just a stupid interview like that with the wrong Charles Cross. And I must have a recording of it somewhere. I'll try
God,
to find
I hope
it.
You do. I'd love to hear that.
Yeah.
Definitely love to hear that.
All right. Okay. And that's my list. I mean, you have something personal to talk about too.
Yeah. So, so adding to that list, and it's been a while, you and I haven't chatted in a bit, but, Quince, passed away.
Your dog.
Yeah. My dog Quince about 3 weeks ago. It's been now actually. So I think it was right after you and I had done our last episode. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, he had cancer and it was just, it was inevitable, but I just, that the hardest part was kind of knowing when. And I got up one morning that morning and I was cleaning his face and I could just see in his eyes. And I, just so you know, I don't believe in that baloney that they'll tell you that you'll know when it's time. I don't believe that. I really don't. I always think it's better to take them out sooner rather than too late. My biggest challenge was making sure that he didn't have any respiratory failure. I just can't imagine dying from not being able to breathe. So I could just tell from
pain.
His face that he just seemed very weary. He was anyway, but when you're with the dog every single day, you don't notice it. It's gradual. And I just felt something that day. Plus it was a holiday weekend or not a holiday weekend, but the vet wasn't going to be in until the next Tuesday. And I didn't want to wait 3 days. So I made that decision, difficult as it was, but you know, I cried for the first 7 days solid. Now I only cry when I talk about it. And I've gotten some lovely cards and people have stopped by and, you know, people who understand that your animals and your pets are just as important and priceless in your experience in life and living, really do understand the pain that's involved with that connection being gone. And no matter what your spiritual beliefs are, whatever that is, it is still a loss no matter what. And so it's been tough. Baby Sherman's been doing well. He was there, so he got to see. Now that I do believe it's important that the companion animal knows so he doesn't look for the other one. So yeah, baby Sherman's doing really well. He's kind of like, God, finally, I get everything.
I get all the attention.
I get all the treats. And of course, I've been, you know, survivor guilt buying from Sherman. He's gotten a new bowl and a new toys and a new bed and new collar. But he's just been such a lovely little boy. He's doing really well. So that's, you know, that's that. And it's going to be me and baby Sherman for a while. I don't think I'm going to get another dog soon unless I open the front door and there's a puppy in a basket. That happens. You know, that happens in the movies, right?
Yeah. Well, I will tell you this too. If you don't want to get another dog right away, do not go to the Humane Society or don't go to, because I mean, we go there, we always come home with a cat or something, frog or a snake or something that you cannot
stop. I know. Yeah. No, I'm avoiding puppies. I'm avoiding looking up puppies. I have a girlfriend who just got a new puppy. She's like, you and Sherman should come by. No, I don't want to see the puppy because I know what'll happen. Yes.
If only I could have a puppy, I'd call myself so very lucky just to have some company.
Well, I know this is not your first time losing a dog. I've lost a couple, three myself. It's the worst. It's the worst.
Yeah, and that's an understatement right there. Yeah.
I feel so sorry for you, and I know what it's like, but it's never.
Yeah. I know. I'm fine. I'm fine. It just.
I remember, at least when I went, I lost our. The last dog we lost, Sadie, this wonderful little female, English Springer Spaniel. I had to finally take her to the vet. And some people drop their animals off and they don't. I have to be with them, of course, and to the end. And so they gave her that initial shot that's supposed to put him to sleep. And the woman said, I'll be back in about 20 minutes. She'll be asleep. Well, she wouldn't go to sleep. And she kept standing, and I remember trying to push her down, saying, just lie down, Sadie. She wouldn't do it. Yeah. And they have this in-house music system, like they do at many businesses. And what song do you think came up?
Don't you know I'm still standing better than I ever did?
I was listening to a podcast with a New York Times columnist. He's 65 years old, but he started at... The Gray Lady when he was 25 years old. So he's been writing forever. His name is Nicholas Kristof. And think about this as a columnist or a reporter, which is really what he is, a journalist.
He's traveled all over the world. He's gone to 170 countries. I didn't even know we had that many countries on the planet.
No, I don't think we do. I think he made some of them up.
He might have, unless you consider, Kent a country. But he started reporting on genocide he was witnessing in the country, in African country of Darfur. And it was getting no attention. Nobody even seemed to be aware this was happening. And so he started reporting on it, like every column, pretty much. And finally, he got the attention of the U.S. government and other world countries, and they were able to go in and quash that genocide. So a guy that's writing a column is responsible rather directly for saving hundreds of thousands of lives. That is an amazing, what a feeling that must be like, the power of journalism, even as, you know, the press is being vilified by certain people all the time. Mm-hmm. But he wrote a column recently about pigs. He grew up on a farm in Yamhill, Oregon, Nicholas Kristof did, and he remembers raising hogs and other animals. He was in 4-H and all of that. Well, he wrote a column recently about dogs and pigs, the thrust of his article.
Just so you know, I've dated both.
Yes, I know you have.
I've dated more pigs than dogs, I think.
His point is that pigs, and you've always heard this, are intelligent. They have personalities.
Yes.
They're affectionate. And they, and in many ways, mirror dogs. And you might even argue that pigs are smarter and have better personalities than some dogs.
That's what they say.
But his point of his article is he's aimed at these giant meat factories. They slaughter hogs and cows and things, but particularly pigs, and they do it in the most inhumane, horrible ways. You know, if you're going to take your dog in to get fixed, they put him to sleep and they do it. Not with pigs. They whack them right off, right there. They torture them. They put them in these little pens that are so small they can't even turn around. That's where they live their lives. And then they meet this ignominious end. So his argument is that if you were doing this stuff to dogs, for some reason we like dog meat, and people were, you know, slaughtering dogs and being cruel to them, like we are with pigs, there'd be a major scandal and people would be outraged and picketing. But what happens on these meat farms, the CEO of these companies, they get rewarded for it by making huge amounts of money. That distinction between dogs and pigs I thought was very interesting. And it speaks, of course, to the way we treat our farm animals in these big corporations. And nobody really pays much attention to it because we like our sausage in the morning.
That's all, folks.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you this. This is something I've been wanting to talk to you about for a long time, but I never knew quite how to get into it. But here we go. So when I'm a kid, I'm a young teen, and I wore glasses, really thick glasses.
When you say, hold on, can I stop you? You said when I'm a kid. Do you mean when you were a kid? Because you're not.
I'm trying to economize my sentences so we can get more things in.
So when you were a kid.
Yeah, it sounds like a stand-up comic. So I'm a kid, see? When I was a kid. When I'm a kid. Yeah.
So okay. You were a kid, and when you were a young teenager, you started wearing glasses when you were a young teenager, or did you wear them before then?
Second grade, I started wearing
them. You did?
My dad saw me watching TV about 1 inch from the screen, squinting.
Oh, Pat. Know that.
Yeah, life as a kid wearing glasses is not a good one. You feel very conspicuous. My glasses were always getting broken. So there's a lot.
Hey, four eyes.
Oh, yeah. There's lots of pictures of me with, you know, tape between the bows of my glasses and stuff.
Yeah.
And then if you lose your glasses, you set them down. Yeah. Then you need another pair of glasses to find your glasses. It's horrible.
Right.
So, the miracle of contact lenses.
Okay, so we're jumping to young teens. You've got glasses.
Yes.
Continue. So, I just needed to clarify, which I often have to do with you and your stories.
That's what the point of wearing glasses is, to clarify.
Okay.
So And I don't know anything, Lisa, about how sex works, or I just
Wait,
had an...
you just, again, you're doing it in the present tense. You do know exactly how sex works, so you need to rephrase that. I didn't know anything about how sex worked.
Yeah, I'm still thinking of myself in the past tense.
Or is it the present? Is that true in the present tense?
There's no reason this story should take this long to tell, but well, it's my fault.
Okay, so okay. Here we go.
When Pat, now I'll go third person. When Pat okay. was a young guy in his 12, 13 years old,
okay.
Even though he didn't know anything about how procreation or recreational sex worked.
Right.
There was an instinct in him that, like there is maybe for many people, that are drawn to the other gender, sometimes the same gender, but in my mm-hmm. case, the other gender. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know why, but I just mm-hmm. know, oh, man, she's pretty.
I want to get me some of that.
She looks much prettier than my brothers. Yeah. So now I'm going to give this woman a fake name for the storytelling purposes here. Because she was one grade above me in class.
All right.
And her name, I'm going to make up a name, Roxanne Bilodeau, let's say.
Roxanne. That doesn't sound made up.
Well,
that
it is.
Sounds like it's her name.
Well, that's good. That helps the storytelling then. So Roxanne.
Well, what's her made up name again? Roxanne Bilodeau. Okie dokie.
Again, a fake name.
Made up name. Okay.
So Roxanne Bilodeau, Lisa, was built. I mean, she.
Jesus
oh my Christ. God! I couldn't believe it, and I wasn't alone in thinking that. Just and she was
Pat,
sweet, and she
down.
Was had a pretty face. I mean, there was not one flaw on this woman. And but
and
she,
how old was she? So she was a grade above you.
Grade
so
me.
She so, was 15?
So if I'm 13, 14, she's 15,
16.
And she's already built. She's just
I. You know, can I again? Men who say yeah, she's
I know.
Built, man.
I know,
she like
I know.
A
That's
she was
sexist.
A brick. She was a brick house, man. She was yeah. built. Can
okay.
you just say she cut an appealing figure, perhaps?
Yes, I should have said that. She was comely. She
okay.
she was statuesque. She had a lovely hourglass figure, whatever you want to say.
She was built.
But she was stunning to my young eyes, which couldn't see, of course. So I remember going to the public swimming pool one day, and I stupidly left my glasses in the locker room because I didn't want to lose them in the pool.
Right.
But I can see her. I'd seen her earlier, and then she gets out of the pool
oh,
right
no.
in front of me. I'm lying on the, you know, oh, just no. drying on the cement, lying
yeah.
out. And she gets out of the pool, and I'm squinting for all I'm worth, trying to be discreet about it. But,
Roxanne! She had a bathing suit on, I'm assuming.
I don't remember. I wish she did. It didn't matter. She just was absolutely.
It didn't matter. She climbed out of that pool wearing a grain sack.
Yeah. I mean, she's so curvaceous. It didn't matter what she was wearing or not wearing. And I just think, oh my gosh, look at that. It's like something that had just appeared from the heavens. I couldn't believe it. And I'm squinting away at it. So anyway, the point is. That I've never actually talked to her my whole life. I've never really formally met her,
yeah.
but I always was transfixed by her every time I saw her. Then I grow up, go to college and move away and live in Seattle for 35 years. But always, I'm always still bringing up Roxanne Bilodeau to people, you know, or guys that still lived in my hometown. Hey, do you guys, does Roxanne Bilodeau still around? I don't know, but I'll bet she's as big as a house by now. You know, and they'll say stuff like that.
Why do guys say?
I don't know.
That's sour grapes right there.
Yeah, because you're as big as a house, and so you.
No, no, not necessarily that. But you just know Roxanne Bilodeau would never like hang out with the likes of you, so you have to make some sort of well, yeah.
Sure glad she didn't go with me because I would have been
yeah,
stuck with her.
Yeah, she's big yeah, as a house now, and her breath probably stinks. And have you like Googled her?
No.
no, no.
Would you let me Google her?
But a guy, no, listen now. Okay. A guy, one of my friends,
okay,
he sends me a picture one day. And he said, I just saw this picture. I just shot it 2 days ago. And it's he and she, yes, Roxanne Bilodeau, standing in front of some building. It's a selfie. And she looks.
Okay, well, you mean recently? When is this?
Yes,
when
recently. This? Recently.
Okay.
Roxanne!
Oh, my God.
And he's heard me talking and waxing rhapsodic about Roxanne Bilodeau forever. So he.
The one that's built.
Yeah. And she's pretty. And so he sends me this picture, and she looks fabulous.
Oh, man.
She still looks fabulous. And so now I'm going crazy. And believe me, I love my wife. I do.
I know you do.
But I'm obsessed with this. This is not a healthy obsession.
No.
And I bring it up all the time. And so now I find out that my wife said, you know what these guys are doing, because I've talked to them. I said, what? They are going to ambush you with Roxanne Bilodeau. If those guys do that, I will never speak to them again. They cannot embarrass me like that. And she said, you asked for it. Just be wary. It's going to happen.
Roxanne!
Now I'm as nervous as a cat in a
room
full of rocking chairs, as they say. Because
I seriously,
I don't know what I'm going to say. What I would say. I guess I would try to say, yeah, that whole thing about, you know, being obsessed about you, it was just a joke. I carried that joke through the years. It's, you seem like a really nice person, but believe me, I didn't have any lascivious intentions. Then I created this fantasy in my mind. I never saw you again for 40 years.
You sound so nervous right now.
I am nervous, Lisa.
I can tell. My God. Okay, here's all you have to do.
What?
You just have to pretend you have Alzheimer's and go, I don't know who you are.
Well, there's your solution. I may not have to pretend much longer.
Just say, and here's the other thing. Do you think she'd even go along with it? You're assuming.
Well, I don't know. I hope
You're assuming that she would be like, no, that's dumb. I wouldn't. If she's as nice and built and fabulous as you say she is.
I wish she wouldn't use the word built. But
then she probably has at least some sort of her character would dictate that she wouldn't put somebody in an uncomfortable position.
That is what I believe about her. But these guys are so dogged about.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just a big tease, and they want me to be nervous the whole time.
Yeah, they probably. So, how did he come across her? Did he say? Did you ask?
Well, the picture is in front of a VFW hall somewhere. I don't know what that has to do with anything, but
okay,
that happened to be in a nearby town here in Central Oregon. So, first of all, now I know. Well, one, she's alive,
right?
And two. As they said, she's not as big as a house.
She's carrying it well.
It's a very nice house. Let's put it.
It's a well-built house.
It's a lovely craftsman, is what it is.
Well, I agree with your wife, who's always smarter than you. And you have this. You shouldn't have been blabbing on. It's interesting to me, though, that how many people did you talk to about her?
Oh, I don't know. Countless people through the years. I mean. You know, living in Seattle, we might be sitting around talking to a bunch of guys, and they'll say, you know, I sure like Connie White. She was sure a cutie. So I'll say, you know, the one I really liked back in my hometown, you guys have never met her, but she was a knockout. Roxanne, what did I say? Bilodeau? Yeah. Roxanne
Bilodeau. They're going to go, oh, yeah, we already know. You've mentioned her 8,000 times already.
I mention her all the time.
You know what? If you've never talked to her.
Never have.
And this might be good for you to actually meet her. Because what if she's like dumb as a bag of rocks?
I don't care. What if she... Even better. I obviously didn't love her for her mind. I really never even heard her talk, I don't think.
That's true, but don't you think it would turn you off in a certain way if you you had her built up? She's not who she is in your mind. She's not.
She can't be.
She's No, she's not. So don't you think a good dose of reality might do you good to maybe put this little baby to rest?
So you're suggesting that if I do meet her, it'll be like, the guy will say, "Hey, Pat, you know who this is? It's Roxanne Bilodeau, Roxanne Pat Cashman."
Roxanne!
Oh, hi, Pat. How are you? It's so nice to see you, honey. I've heard so much about you.
And then she farts really loud. So that... Oh, honey, you're
sweet.
So cute. I love that you still have this little crush on Roxanne Bilodeau.
Isn't that but I have a crush on an illusion. It's not a real person.
That's all crushes are anyway. They're never built on the real person.
In high school, she had a boyfriend who was my age. And Lisa, to be charitable, the guy was kind of a goofy looking guy. That's what I thought. And so me and most of my friends were all going, "Can you believe that? She's going out with him? Can you believe it?" And so just the jealousy was just jumping off the walls.
I am really, really proud of you for bringing this dark thing up that's been weighing on you for how many years now? 50, well, 60, 80, 20? Well,
yeah, I'm 96, so let's see. That'd be 80 years. 80 years I've been carrying
so
the torch.
I just feel like I think you need to meet her. This is something I just feel strongly about.
I wouldn't mind meeting her, but not under the circumstances where they're going to tell her, this guy's obsessed with you. I don't want to meet her under the, I just want to meet her as a regular person and not all the background details.
Well, no, you can't.
That's embarrassing.
It's fine. It's not going to kill you.
Do you think she'd be flattered to know that I have thought of her all these years?
Pat, listen to me.
Yeah.
She's probably had many, many men. You're not the only person obsessed over her.
No, that's true. That is absolutely true. Yeah.
So I doubt she's going to be flattered. She's going to roll her eyes and go, "Here we go again. Here's
another goober that's..." You're right. You're probably right. Yeah.
So I doubt it, but or she just might be amused by it. Or here's a twist. What if? What if she says, "Oh my God, I have had a crush on, I have been thinking about him for 57 years, and I can't believe
Lisa,
I can't believe."
Do you think that's possible?
No. I was just saying what a weird plot twist that would be then.
I think of Dumb and Dumber, like, so you're saying there's a chance, but you're not saying that.
No, I just said, wouldn't it be interesting?
Yeah. Well, it'd be more than interesting.
I'm not saying it's true.
It'd be life-affirming.
But I think that you have to... Now, you can't just let it end here. Now that you know she's alive, now that her friend... I think... Where does she live? Is she in Oregon?
Apparently, or maybe she was... I didn't ask too many questions. I just... And here's the other thing with the photo, by the way. And I'll get off of this. The photo, she looked really good, but the photo was not a great photo. It looked like it was taken around dusk. A little fuzzy, not sharp. I mean, from what I could see, well, maybe she isn't so dynamically attractive anymore. I couldn't, well, you know, she's older than me, so she's going to have some wrinkles and some going to be parts of her that are sagging pretty good.
God, do you even hear?
Well, there's parts of me that are sagging, so why would she somehow be immune to that?
Well, and again, this...
I guess as long as she's sagging in the right places, that would...
You've just completely objectified her
whole
life.
I know.
And so this is...
I'm not thinking clearly because I'm... This is just a fantasy.
Can't believe you sometimes. You make me laugh so hard.
All right, let's just skip.
I love your wife though. She's probably sitting in the other room rolling her eyes going, "Oh, for crying out loud. Get a load of this guy."
She is encouraging these guys to follow through on this.
Me too. Yeah. I am too.
Oh, God.
So what are you going to do, mister?
I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. Here's another thought. Speaking of my childhood, and I don't mean to dominate this whole thing, but it just occurred to me the other day that my brothers and I were talking about this, and my parents, I don't know if your mom had a word, like when you wanted to go to the bathroom, you, mm-hmm. you've got one of two tasks you can perform on the toilet.
Yes, I do have an answer to this.
Did she have a word that meant to urinate?
Oh, no, she had a word. I can't remember. She might have.
Just pee. Maybe just pee.
I don't know. I don't remember, but she had a word for the other one. And I'll tell you, one of the most embarrassing moments of my life.
What was it?
Boom, boom.
Boom, 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 boom.
She would say...
Oh, my God.
She would say, do you have to go boom, boom? I'd be like... Yeah, that's what I thought it was. And so I had...
So what happened when you had diarrhea?
Well, let me just...
Was it whoosh, whoosh?
So I didn't know any better. Didn't know that it wasn't... So I was 12 years old, still thinking it's called Boom Boom, and had an appendicitis attack and had to go into emergency where...
Really?
Yeah, so I was... 12 years old. So I went in and I'm being examined. I'm in extreme pain. And the doctor, I think, wanted to know if it was just a gastronaut, you know, whatever. So he said to me, when was the last time that you had a bowel movement? And I'm like, what is that?
Is that a musical term?
Oh, I didn't know what it was. And my mom kind of looks kind of, she's like, he means boom, boom. And I'm like, ow, for crying out loud. Boom, boom. Yeah. So that was the day I learned it was not technically called boom, boom. It was called a bowel movement.
Or BM.
So there you go.
Yeah.
So well, what was your word?
Mine's not embarrassing, or maybe it is. But this was my parents. They decided that if, and we were all boys in the family, there were no sisters. So if you had to take a pee, you had to go take a toto. So every time I see these plumbing fixtures that have their brand name Toto, I think that must be where they got it. And then I remember laughing really hard every time the Wizard of Oz came on TV.
Oh,
oh my God, she named her dog Toto, Dad. Isn't that weird? So, yeah. But then the other thing was called a job.
Oh, wow. That's quite frank and just stark.
Hey, Pat, are you okay? Do you have to take a job? Why don't you go in there and take a job?
Okay, that's funny.
Where did they come
from? The first one's adorable and cute, and the second one's just like there's no humor or nothing cute about it. It's very matter of fact.
And my parents are both gone. I don't know how I would bring it up, but I would love to know, where did you come up with those?
Did you pass that on to your kids?
No.
What did you call it?
Boom, boom, and bam, bam. And it's none of my business whether you're doing a number one or a number two. It's up to you. Dad, I'm doing a number three. Uh-oh. The young minister was asked by a funeral director to conduct a graveside service for a homeless man who had no family, no friends. The cemetery was way back in the country, and the minister got lost. But finally he saw the backhoe in the field and the gravedigger standing by, but there was no hearse in sight. So he dashed over to the grave, and he saw that the vault lid was already in place. So the young minister opened up his Bible and began to preach. He preached about God's mercy and the parable of the prodigal son, and the hope of the resurrection. And then he bowed his head in prayer. And one of the workers said, you know, I ain't never seen anything like this before. And I've been putting in septic tanks for 20 years.
Oh, Roxanne, you don't have to put on the red light.
those days are over. You don't have to sell your body to the night, Roxanne. You don't have to wear that dress tonight. Walk the street for money. You don't care if it's wrong or if it's right, Roxanne. You don't have to put on the red light, Roxanne. You don't have to put on the red light, Roxanne. You don't have to put on the red light,
for listening to Peculiar Podcast.
Hey, goodbyes.
Join Pat and Lisa online at peculiarpodcast.com.
The gift that keeps on giving the whole year.
And on the Peculiar Podcast Facebook fan page.
Sweet.
On Twitter at Peculiar Podcast, at Mr. Pat Cashman, and at Foster Chick.
Join us and live in peace, or pursue your present course and face obliteration.